Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, standing in on this Sunday evening tonight, discussing the Davis Wilson leaked UFO docs with Dr. Stephen Greer. Now, Dr. Greer, with this type of disclosure that the public is going through right now with the mainstream media, this is something that has to have been planned for a very long time. It's not done willy-nilly. Is this a CIA effort? Is this a Project Mockingbird situation that has been worked on for decades? How is this done?
Well, it's a multi-agency operation, but it's at the USAP level. So to give people a concept of how this might operate or does operate, is that there are people that are in these USAPs from a number of agencies. It's a mistake to think that it's only CIA or Pentagon or X Corporation or what have you. It's from a number of sectors, including the private sector and financial, et cetera. So those policies are determined by a senior policy group. Admiral Wilson refers to the old Appalachian Majestic 12. It's actually MAJIC, the Majority Intelligence Committee, which we have on a number of classified documents that have not been declassified, but that we've obtained, and that organization draws representation from a wide number of other agencies, NSA, CIA, et cetera. So it's an entity unto itself. It's unacknowledged. And to quote from what Admiral Wilson said on page 7 of the memo, they told me of a special records group not belonging to usual SAPs, special access projects, and a special subset of the unacknowledged carve-outs and WAVE projects not belonging to usual SAP divisions as organized in 94 by Secretary of Defense Perry himself, that's set apart from the rest but buried and covered by conventional SAPs. It's very Byzantine. It's very complex. And that's what I began to uncover in 92, 93, 94, and is the foundation of the disclosure project, quite frankly. So the way that this is working is that people who are given, say, airtime in the mainstream media are people who have been cleared to speak about it within certain parameters and with a certain spin. So remember, Washington and these powerful organizations are all about spin. How do you spin the subject to your advantage? So disclosure is happening. People are having contact with Seton5Film.com. A site we have is because we're doing a film that's going to basically be a call to action for hundreds of millions of people to bypass the government and make direct contact with these civilizations and just tell these clandestine operations to go jump in the lake. And by the way, if the people would actually get out off their seats and out from underneath their TVs and smartphones and go out there and do it, you would see disclosure happen in a way that is completely not able to be controlled by the government and the media. But the media, remember, if you one of the themes in the movie Unacknowledged is that the mainstream media is a wholly owned subsidiary of this group. They do not cover subjects like this without it being cleared for a certain spin and a certain depth of coverage. They're not going to cover the USAPs, even though it's well known to exist. They are not going to cover the fact that there are trillions of dollars missing out of the budget, and they're not going to cover the fact that we already have operational devices that look like UFOs that have been used to hoax pseudo-alien events for their psychological warfare value. I'm quoting from a 1953 document. So I think that the public really has to understand that when you see something on CNN or the Washington Post or New York Times, that has been gone through a number of levels of vetting, has been sanitized. The people who are allowed to speak in that setting, if they talk about a vague phenomenon or tell a half-truth that continues either the cover-up or spins the disclosure in the direction of something frightening and a threat, they will be on those programs. If you don't toe the company line, you will not be on those programs. And that is how they make that decision. And by the way, the same is done for people like Admiral Wilson. The reason he wasn't read into these projects, he was a fundamentally good and honest man. This is what I had to say to Lord Hill Norton, who was the Minister of Defense for a number of years for Great Britain. And I'm sitting at his cottage at his home, and he was livid, I mean in a rage, that he had been denied access to these projects the entire time he was the head of the Ministry of Defense for Great Britain, and also the head of MI5 and MI6, the equivalent of their, you know, FBI and CIA. It's all within the purview of the Minister of Defense. And he told me, he says, why wouldn't they have told me? And I said, well, I'm going to answer your question with a question. And he thought I was being an impertinent yank. And I said, well, just hear me out. What would you have done, Admiral, if you, this is a five-star admiral, back then he used to call them sea lords, if you knew and found out that there was a clandestine operation that was running illegally, had been involved in murder, mayhem, deception, and that they were keeping from the public, not only that we were not alone in the universe, but they were hiding the technologies that would solve the world poverty and pollution and environmental problems. And he went into a more of a rage and said, I wouldn't have stood for it for a goddamn minute. I was in a rage. I'm sitting at his cottage, they call it his big house out in Salisbury in Hampshire, and I said, well, that's why they didn't tell you. They knew, they did a psychological profile on you. They knew that you would not go along with this kind of criminal enterprise, and so you were blocked. So the way you get into those projects is to be enough of a sociopath that they will read you into them. And if they think you will not go along with the party line, they will do everything to block you, which is what happened to Admiral Wilson. If you read the document carefully, you can see that he was basically being blown off and said, well, go look at the records department here and go look here and go look there. It's a little bit like when Jimmy Carter was trying to get information from outgoing CIA director George Bush Sr. And Carter asked this outgoing CIA director, you know, about the UFO issue, because Carter, as you all know, had seen a UFO, made a report as governor, ran his campaign in 76 on opening the files. And Bush turned to, Papa Bush, turned to the new president-elect and said, I'm not going to tell you anything. If you want to find out, go ask the Congressional Research Service and send him on a wild goose chase. Now, we know this from a fact because we have Disclosure Project witnesses who actually assisted President Carter in that effort after the outgoing CIA director, and that one, Papa Bush, was read into these projects, blew off an incoming president, Jimmy Carter. So that is how the system works. People need to understand that the reason I've been trying to expose the architecture and the modus operandi, how these systems work, and these are not speculation on my part. This is from having hundreds of meetings like this with Admiral Wilson, and finding out who is read in and why and who isn't. It's just as important to know who isn't. And when you come across a document like this, it confirms the assessment that we've been sharing with the public for a number of years, but it also should give people pause to realize a man of this rank. I encourage you not to just refer to he's Admiral Wilson J2, head of Intelligence Joint Staff. We're not talking about a low-level munchkin in the bureaucracy of the Pentagon. We're talking a very senior officer who should have been informed of these projects, and not only wasn't, but when he found out about them through the briefing I did, he was then denied access. And of course, it's a kind of an interesting read on page 7 to go through, you know, how he was run to this, you know, alphabet soup agency and this one and to this person and that person. But basically, he was being run through the mill.
And he was threatened. He was threatened too, as well, with his his retirement.
Yes, sir. That's classic. That is the prima facie evidence of a criminal organization that would threaten someone of his rank with having some stars knocked off his lapel. You know.
And also in the document, it's mentioned both crashed and landed saucers. Now, again, it's a direct reference. Crashed is one thing. Landed is another. And then, of course, the ARVs, which you just briefly mentioned. But why are they trying to glean information that maybe was disclosed in your Pentagon meeting? Did you discuss crashed or landed craft at the Pentagon?
Oh, yeah, extensively. I mean, remember, this was supposed to be a stand-up brief for 45 minutes. The admiral was so concerned about this. It went on for 2 or 3 hours. He kept canceling his other appointments that were supposed to take place after mine ended. And so, no, he was deeply concerned about this. And there was a poignant moment towards the end when I asked him for his help because we were desperate. And, you know, the president was being denied. And he said, well, who else have you met with and briefed? I said, well, the CIA director and the president's guys and the Senate Intel Committee members, not all of them, some of them, and some of your counterparts in other agencies. He says, well, what happened to them? I said, they were denied access just like you. And he says, well, I have learned that there's a group that is beneath or above or whatever my pay grade that won't tell me anything. And if I were to try to take them on, they have things, these ARVs, these man-made UFOs, that can do circles around the best thing I have, a B-2 stealth. And I said, yes, sir, they do. He says, well, then it's point, set, match. It's over. I said, no, it isn't. We can't give up. So I was there trying to say, but he basically said, look, he turned to me and he said, a lot of people have asked, how did you do this disclosure? But did anyone ever authorize this at a high rank? I said, yeah. The head of intelligence, joint staff, Admiral Wilson, did. He turned to me and looked me in the eyes. He said, Dr. Greer, if you have people who've been in these projects who know about them, and they have documents or their testimony, as far as I'm concerned, they can state anything to the public because those projects are illegal. And if they're illegal, they're not authorized, they're not sanctioned, and good luck. And that's so I always kind of half joke that, but it's not a joke, that this admiral basically greenlighted the disclosure project and encouraged us to go forward with anything and everyone we could, which is why we then, in the late 90s, early 2000s, put out a call for people to come forward, which gave birth to the what's known now as the disclosure project.
The ARV references here, reverse engineering, there's a comment that says it's been going slow. Now, I'm paraphrasing, of course. Is there part of the research that they understand and reverse engineering is fine, and there's other aspects of it that they just, quite frankly, don't understand? What's that reference to?
It's because it depends on which compartment you talk to, all right? So within these USAPs, for example, I'm working with a man who worked in the technology management office, this in the sub-basement of the Pentagon, for 10 years on this particular issue of UFOs. He was one of the few people out of 5,000 people in these various USAPs. There were 18 USAPs that didn't even know each other existed, but he had baseline clearance across 18 of them. He is sharing intel with me. I just met him about a year ago in May. And what you find is that, and he's one of hundreds of people like this I've met with, but what you find is that one compartment won't know that we have advanced technology dealing with, say, propulsion or technologies that interface with directed thought and consciousness, that kind of thing. And another compartment will. Well, this you would expect that in a highly compartmented, unacknowledged special access project. So depending on who the admiral talked to, they could have been telling him the truth that, well, we really don't know. It seems to be going slowly. But if you were to talk to someone else in a corporate program that is under contract under a WFO, work for others program from the government to a USAP, so you have a USAP contracting to, say, Raytheon or SAIC or Lockheed Skunk Works, those people in that compartment may actually know what the state of the art of the technology is, but someone in another compartment wouldn't. See, this is why, you know, the grand, broad stroke, non-nuanced conspiracy theories are all wrong. You've got to get the nuance right. The details really matter here, Jimmy. And I think that what I'm trying to say is that you really have to do a granular analysis of it, but also get the 30,000-foot approach where you know, talk to people who are at a high enough level in these USAPs that they kind of know what's going on across the various silos, these freestanding USAPs that are quite sealed off from each other. And there are a number of people I've met with who have had what's called baseline clearance across a number of these USAPs. And what you find is that it's not unusual for one highly classified project to not even know the other ones exist. Not only that, but never mind how advanced the technologies are that are in one versus another. So this is putting together a very, it's like playing chess in 38 dimensions. It strains every neuron in my brain, having had to deal with this. But I'll tell you that when you talk to people who have been in these baseline clearance situations, the technologies we have, forget about it. I mean, it would so shock all of your listeners to hear what we have and how they have been deployed to hoax what look like alien events. It is really the most dangerous thing going on. There are a number of people who have been raising this alarm bell. The UFO subculture doesn't want to hear it. But if you go towards the end of the this document, I think it's on page like 14 or something, where, you know, or the last page, he says, talking to one of these officials, he said, what did he say? And the admiral says, well, UFOs are real. So-called alien abductions, not real. Well, I've been working with people since 93, 94, 95 who have been on abduction and mutilation squads that are human that will stage events that look alien. And moreover, they will victimize people who have had contact with actual ETs and then stage and put on top of that experience a man-made military or pseudo-alien abduction. It's very complicated. And the problem is, you know, it's a little bit like that the quote from Gloria Steinem, who said, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off.
Right.
The problem is, the truth is actually stranger than the fiction the public has been sold on this, and it covers its own self. The truth hides itself because it's more bizarre than what people think is the truth. And this gets into really going down the rabbit hole, I know, but we are on Coast to Coast, so we might as well talk about it. And this is why the name of the game here for 50, 60, 70 years has been counterintelligence. There's intelligence gathering, but counterintelligence is really what's been going on.
Well, we need to take a break right here. We'll finish up with counterintelligence when we get back. And I always found it interesting with a lot of these abduction cases where there's always a military person in the background. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest, Dr. Stephen Greer, will be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Just released, the National UFO Reporting Center has a list of states which have the most and least UFO sightings. So here you go. States with the most sightings, top five, right? Okay, number five, Maine. Four, Alaska. Three, Vermont. Number two, Montana. The number one state in the country with the most UFO sightings, Washington. And I fully agree with that. Now, the states with the fewest sightings, number five, Alabama. Number four, Mississippi. Number three, Georgia. Number two, Louisiana. And here's the surprise. The number one state in the country with the least amount of UFO sightings, Texas. Right? Doesn't even make any sense. It's too big. But there you go. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, tonight discussing the Davis-Wilson leaked UFO documents with Dr. Stephen Greer. You can follow me on Twitter at J Church Radio. You can follow Dr. Stephen Greer at Dr. Stephen Greer on Twitter. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM, standing in on this Sunday night. I am your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest, Dr. Stephen Greer, and we're discussing the Davis-Wilson leaked UFO documents. Dr. Greer, we brought up disinformation right before the break, and we were also talking about ARVs. Something curious is happening here for me as I look at this, in that these sightings and the reports by the pilots happened during naval exercises on the both coast. Could it be, because it's so compartmentalized, that these pilots were witnessing ARVs, our own craft, to maybe test the system, to test the craft, or test how they would react?
It's completely possible. Without having more detailed images of these craft, it's hard to say. I can tell you that the ones that are of interstellar origin are very almost etheric. There are no seams. There are no parts. There are no bolts. There are no openings. and there's no way to go in or out of them because the occupants move through them transdimensionally. It's a very well-known science beyond the scope of the show tonight. So it's certainly possible. We know there have been other events where man-made operational EMGs, electromagnetogravitics, or ARVs, alien reproduction vehicles, have been used to deceive military people or the public. So I'm agnostic on this without having more details of exactly what these craft look like in terms of their moving, stopping, making right-hand turns. Could be an ET craft. It could be a man-made, very classified aircraft that was sent up for to see how our conventional military would know about, would react to it. Because remember, if you're going to do a false flag operation using man-made objects, and this is what I was read into in the early and mid-90s by a man who was on an interagency team who told me, look, we can hit a button tonight, and there would be events that would take place that 99.99999% of the population, including all of our leaders, would think was an alien attack, and it would be us doing it. And those systems, he was on that interagency board in the, like, 74, 75. He said and that capability had existed long before 1974 and 75. Now, this sounds like a bad episode of The X-Files or Stranger Things or some science fiction. Unfortunately, I'm here to tell your listeners it is not fictional. That capability exists. So certainly that is possible. And this is why the public, the informed public, you know, need to be skeptical of the things that are trotted out that is evidence of an alien threat. Because what I keep coming back to, I have headed up a international diplomatic corps making contact with these civilizations since 1990. And you've been at things I presented where you've seen some of the events that have taken place that are astounding and beautiful. This next documentary that we're doing is called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, Contact, Consciousness, and the Human Future. That film, CE5.com, is being crowdfunded. We're about to finish production. We hope it to come out in the first couple weeks of December of this year. Because what I want people to understand is, don't feel that you have no power. The people have all the power, but if they use it, if they don't use it, they don't have the power. And the way you get power over this is that not a lot of people are going to be able to take on the cabal or the Majority Intelligence Committee or, you know, do all this stuff that sort of someone, a wild man like me, has done. But they can all go out under the stars with a few people, understand how these genuine ET civilizations communicate using coherent thought and transdimensional electronic devices that interface with consciousness and thought, make contact, and have events take place. If millions of people around the world started doing that, guess what? It's like someone doing a denial of service to your internet server or your website. The public taking this matter into their own hands would take it out of the control of the spinmeisters and the counterintelligence guys and the sociopaths running these covert programs. I think we spend way too much time stirring the darkness of that around instead of saying, what are we going to do to solve it? So what I've seen is we have to do a couple of things. We have to do more disclosure and encourage brave people to come forward publicly. I wish Admiral Wilson would come forward publicly, but I think he's too afraid to do so. But I think that on the same token, ordinary people can do a lot more than they realize, because, you know, they've done studies in consciousness where when there's a critical mass of people that start doing something positive, that is affecting people that they don't even have direct contact with through the entanglement, non-locality, the quantum physics of the consciousness field. And I know we're getting a little off topic here, but this is really important. How do you change the direction that we're going, which is right now towards the disclosure that serves the secret agenda that we warned about in the 90s. I think that we have to begin to take this matter into our own hands by large numbers of people going out and making direct contact with these civilizations in the best way they know how. We have a set of protocols that we provide, but people can do their own thing. But the main thing is to create that awareness. Don't be a victim. Don't be a sheeple. Take the destiny of our planet and humanity and our emerging embryonic relationship between our civilization and these other civilizations out of the hands of warmongers and sociopaths and put it in the hands of the people who are enlightened and peaceful on this planet, which frankly is most of the population of the Earth. So I think that we have a lot more capability than we give ourselves credit for. I have great faith in that. But only if we do it. We have to actually put one step in front of the other. I remember one time, it was before this briefing with Admiral Wilson, and I was with Edgar Mitchell at the very first briefing gathering, a private gathering of top secret Soviet, U.S. astronauts, cosmonauts, military, CIA, KGB people that we did in California. Most people don't know about this event. It happened in 1995 in Asilomar. And near Monterey. And Edgar Mitchell turned to me. He says, "Do you have any idea what you've taken on doing this?" I said, "Yeah, I do." And he says, "Well, we just have to put one step in front of the next and never look back. We can't look back." And I said, "Yeah, that's what we have to do. And we will." So Ed Mitchell and I had a great talk about that. It was very beautiful there in Asilomar. And it was the first gathering that we did when I had the idea that, you know what? In 95, by then I'd realized that the presidency had been decapitated, the CIA director had been decapitated that was in office. Later I had these meetings with Admiral Wilson and others, and as recently as a few weeks ago, I had a meeting with someone of similar rank I don't want to go into right now because I've told them I wouldn't, but until they're out of office. But I think that the key thing here is, you know, we need to understand that as people, if we come together, not only to speak the truth about these things and disclosure, but also to make peaceful contact with these civilizations, we can do that. But we have to come together to do that. And it, you can't create light by stirring around the darkness. You actually have to light a candle. So lighting a candle here is moving disclosure forward, but also the people taking this into their own hands and making direct contact with these civilizations. And don't be afraid to do so. I've been doing this, well, I had my first event where I had contact with an ET and being on board a craft when I was 18, and I have never been harmed or afraid, startled perhaps. And what I tell people is that since then I've had the privilege of being out under the stars with thousands of people on expeditions all over the world, and we've had the most beautiful events take place, and we have never been harmed or threatened except by a military asset occasionally, you know, a chopper or people who come out through the desert, you know, in camo that roll up on us. But most of the time, it's just us out under the stars, and we have these amazing events take place. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, we were up in Arizona on a mountain, and this elderly man, we were having this beautiful contact event, and we saw this object flash right into our circle. And we're sitting in the dark at 5,000 feet in Arizona. And this man had had a permanent hearing loss since he was a child. And suddenly he had contact, and we have a photograph of this beautiful, some people might be freaked out, but it's sort of a manta ray shape, sort of a triangular shaped head, tall ET, standing beside this man, about two people away from me. And this man had contact throughout the night with this ET, both physical and transdimensionally. And the next morning, I mean, he's like a 65-year-old man, all of his hearing loss had been reversed. Yet he took his hearing aids out and threw them away. And he wanted to do this for the benefit of humanity, but he just said, well, but also if you can help me with this, because I really can't hear what's going on at these meetings. And so this ET, who is a master healer, I mean, this is a species that we know does amazing work with humans. And it's ET. It's not just some spirit being. It's an extraterrestrial civilization. It's well known. And so all the caricatures about the ETs, I just kind of laugh. I go, it's actually so much more complex and beautiful. And I encourage people not to give in to fear, but to go out bravely into the night under the stars and make contact. And we, the people, need to manifest a whole new direction, not just for America, for this planet, where we get off this crazy endless war footing and secrecy and onto a path of a a time of universal peace and a time of open contact. And that's what's awaiting us. It's actually a wonderful time that's going to be coming. But we have to navigate this early stage of contact and disclosure very carefully and not let it be seized and hijacked by the sociopaths inside the cabal of the magic, the Majority Intelligence Committee.
Well, I think that everybody is willing to navigate. But on one hand, you present your contacts with politicians in the military and your meetings at the Pentagon. But on the other hand, we have a difficult time trusting the military and the Pentagon and what's coming out of Washington. And so for those trying to navigate, they don't know what to do. They don't know, do we trust what is happening right now when it comes to disclosure out of Washington?
No, that's what I've been saying. You absolutely can't. If it's in the mainstream media and it's these cutouts of the cabal,
right?
Like, Hal Puthoff or Elizondo or Chris Mellon, who, you know, the Mellon family, absolutely not. I mean, they have a specific mission they've been given, to do a limited disclosure, but with the narrative of it being a threat to our national security, full stop. That's their marching orders, and that's what they're going to continue to do. So once you know what their agenda is, then, all right, you're going to have to be, it's like you take a piece of evidence like they've been releasing, and then you use that as the seductive thing that people go, wow, look at that piece of evidence. But then you very subliminally have this narrative of a threat or a security risk or a violation of our sovereignty, to quote Chris Mellon. I mean, it's ludicrous. If they wanted to violate our sovereignty, they would do so willy-nilly, and it would have all been over in 1945 when we detonated the first atomic weapon. But I think that in reality, you have to understand people like that are operatives, and they're doing exactly what they're being instructed to do. It doesn't mean we have to lack discernment, Jimmy. We have God gave us a brain. We can use it. So all you have to do is step back and say, is this narrative and the way this disclosure is happening serving the agenda of the people who've been keeping it secret for 70 years? Well, the answer is absolutely yes. So we have to begin to have some discernment and understand that they're going to mix facts and cases with a certain spin. I'll give you a great example. You know, we had a lot of people that we found who were at intercontinental ballistic missile facilities and silos where there were ET craft that had come in. And in some cases, these were neutralized. And the same thing in the Soviet Union, we found when we dealt with some of the KGB and other people during the early disclosure efforts in Project Starlight. And the people who were there told me they sent that the ETs were trying to say, they weren't a threat. They were trying to say, please don't blow up this beautiful planet. But if you go to a full mutual assured destruction launch of thousands of these thermonuclear warheads, we would intervene to try to stop it so that there is not the extinction of life on Earth, that you don't have an extinction level event. So it was an act of compassion and a warning. Now, once we came out with those cases, though, there were people who then hijacked those same case files and said, it's a threat to the national security. They have interfered with our nuclear weapons. Well, look, they could have completely atomized them into pink powder if they wanted to get rid of them. They were trying to send a message, these civilizations, about please don't destroy this planet. So you can take the same set of facts and spin it. I'm telling you, your listeners need to hear this. Watch the spin. So there's going to be the case, and then what's the spin? They're going to try to spin it in the direction of fear and a threat. Who benefits from a interplanetary war? Well, the same sociopaths have been benefiting for war for most of this century and the last century, but also the people who want to maintain centralized control over the population through fear and through secrecy and through there being a bigger and bigger threat. So I think that we should be very skeptical of this sort of siren song of alien threat. No one can say that none of these ET civilizations are unhappy with us. I suspect if I were to visit this planet, well, hell, I'm unhappy with what's happening on this planet, and I'm a human. So the fact that they may be not pleased with what's happening here doesn't mean that they're an existential threat that we have to pull out the lasers
right.
and start shooting Star right. Wars style. So I think that there has to be an intelligent conversation about this, because the warmongers are what they're doing, and what you're seeing in the mainstream media is an attempt to drag the conversation into a war footing. That's what they're preparing you for, my friends, and you need to be skeptical.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stephen Greer. And the new film and its website is CE5, the number 5, film.com. You can find the link over at Coast to Coast AM. Go and check it out. And the production is winding down, and they're looking for a December release of the film. Thank you so much, Dr. Greer. Just an amazing time to be part of this community. This is Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back with our next guest, Richard Dolan. Stay with us.